Hey, welcome to the Old School Guns Podcast, the podcast that tells you like it is. And we have no sponsors, we have no network, we have nobody who tells us what to say or do. So what you get here is unvarnished opinion and truth. So I just wanted to start off by welcoming our listeners from Occupied America, and those are places behind the liberal curtain. We have some listeners on the West Coast, occasionally one from California, more likely Oregon and Washington, and some on the East Coast, namely New York, New Jersey, a few places like that, and some of the enclave and disputed areas like Illinois and a few other places. So welcome to them, and you know, I used to be one of you. I used to live in California, and I lived there through the time where it was a normal place to be, through the increasingly onerous regulations that creep in. And it's about, with California, it's about every 7 to 10 years, they basically start messing with the, you know, tightening their gun control regulations. And it does no good. I mean, if crime is generally on a down spike, it basically, the gun control regulations don't accelerate it or deter crime. And back in the 90s, when crime was on a serious uptick, gun control did nothing. Their gun control laws did absolutely nothing. So, they're the laboratory that shows that none of this stuff works. However, there are a lot of great shooters in behind these fake walls of legislation. And California, when I grew up there, used to be a shooting paradise. I mean, not only was there lots of room to hunt and lots of public land to hunt and shoot on, but it also had some of the great ranges that you would find anywhere. And back then, 1,000-yard range was the absolute max you could hope for. And there are some beautiful range facilities in California. So the hobby is strong there. And, hopefully at some point we can get a turnaround and get some of the freedoms back for U.S. citizens who have had their Second Amendment rights, infringed. I mean, it's just that simple. And a lot of those laws are really, just designed to make it inconvenient to own a gun. Only one gun a month laws. There are other things, then the guns have to pass certain, quote, safety tests. And, the Democrats, they don't care about safety. They don't care about any of that. They don't care about a drop test and all the rest of it. There is no rash, there is no wave of guns being dropped and going off that are just, injuring and killing people. It really is an exceptionally rare anomaly, and I would say that it probably just doesn't happen. I mean, it just doesn't happen. There have been a few lawsuits over the years. Ruger was sued over their single action design in the 70s. And, on and on, but it's a very, very, difficult thing to do to get a gun to go off when it's not supposed to. Most negligent discharges are just that. So, if you live behind one of those places, you've got some choices. I made a choice to go. I did not see California changing before my shelf life expired. So I got out of there because I said, hey, I want the next 20, 30, 40, whatever it is, I want it to be in a place where I can own and use the firearms I want to use. So I relocated to the Midwest where I can do that. Other people have that option. Is it the option for everybody? Well, no, there's familial roots and all kinds of things that keep people tied down. But there's also work through legislative changes. Even in a place like California, in some of the rural counties there, you can still get a CCW. You can, push your freedom as far as you can and do what you can. And, you'll be miles ahead of the people who are living in the cities and some of the large liberal controlled enclaves. We definitely want to welcome people who are, you know, living in those jurisdictions and are listening. And, you know, hey, just hang in there. It will change. And if you're young enough and you can get enough support behind it, you can help be part of that positive change. So a couple other things popping up. You know, it's amazing that it's been Donald Trump. The fake news, you know, fake news, the term fake news kind of started out from fake internet stories, you know, stuff you'd see on Facebook and other, you know, kind of unreliable places to get information. And it was really pointed at the, quote, right wing. It was like, well, you know, these right wingers are getting all this fake conservative news, and they were calling that fake news. Well, the term has been now turned around to identify what fake news really is. And unfortunately, it's the mainstream news media, the drive-by media, all the talking talk show hosts and everything have got a different name for it. But it's we live now in a country where you cannot trust the news you hear or that you watch on television. You can't trust it. And cases in point are going down to the current meltdown over impeachment. But that starts in 2016 when there were polls that showed Hillary Clinton comfortably ahead by 10 points or showed Hillary Clinton winning the key battleground states. And all that turned out to be fake. They were trying to influence an election by putting out these fake polls so people can think, well, you know, I don't need to vote because obviously these polls become a pre-vote. And they try to discourage people from actually going and voting by saying, well, this is what the result's going to be. So you may as well not waste your time. That's what that all is. And they still use that. They still use that. I don't believe for a minute that the guy who won the one race in North Carolina was down 17 points, then he wins by 10 points. I don't believe it. I don't believe he was down that much. He was probably close to being either neck and neck or he was actually ahead. And their polling methodology, they don't want to catch it. They want to tell people, they want to discourage that candidate's supporters from going to the polls. And that's what this is about. It's very Orwellian, very, very ugly. You know, it kind of fits in with what we talked about last podcast that, you know, the little girl from Sweden or Norway or wherever she's from, you know, obviously programmed and brainwashed by social justice warrior parents so that now this child, you know, high school child is all spun up about global warming. And then you saw the hate and vitriol on her face when she's talking about what the adults have done. That is not a child's opinion. That is something that's been programmed. And using a child, influencing and abusing a child like that is really ugly, low, and criminal. But that's a lot of what our fake news is trying to do. And it's a lot that's going on in universities, you know. Even myself, you know, and I never made waves. You know, I just sit in class and I just kind of like, you know, what do I need to do to get the good grade out of this class? Because I needed a good grade, and I would sit there, I just kind of do the work. And then, you know, after I get my grade and I'm walking away, I would just flip the bird over my shoulder. You know, I mean, I don't give professors any real credence because the vast majority of them are kooks. Most of them are nut jobs that are hiding out in places where they can teach, and they think they're the big influencers. They've become the cross between Karl Marx and Mr. Chips, you know, and they think they're going to, you know, change the world by addling these young minds to think the way they do. And face it, most of those guys are hypocrites, you know. They everything they talk about, all their social justice and everything else, and then they're driving big fancy cars. I had one guy, he vowed he was a Marxist in class, and I'm a Marxist, I believe in all that. And the guy was driving a new Volvo, you know. I mean, last I saw, you know, a real Marxist drove Trabants and not Volvos. Now, if you're a socialist and you live in Sweden, you could probably drive a Volvo, I guess, if you can afford it. You have to make a whole lot of money because the government's going to take most of it. So you have to have a tremendously good income. But anyway, be that as it may, you know, the fake news was out there. Now fake news is the news. and this impeachment thing is fake news. You know, you read the transcript of the call yourself, the call between Donald Trump and the president of the Ukraine, and, you know, there's nothing there. You kind of read that and you go, if this is impeachable, then I probably do 20 impeachable things before lunch every day. You know, if that call is impeachable, then Barack Obama should have been totally impeached for when he told Medvedev in Russia, hey, you know, tell Vladimir to, you know, call me after the election when I have more flexibility. You know, I mean, you know, come on. That was, I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he said. He said, call me after the election, meaning the 2012 election, when, of course, he wouldn't have to be reelected again and he could have more flexibility to do unpopular things. So, you know, this is all ridiculous, and I think the Democrats have managed to shoot themselves in the foot, but they are aided and abetted by, you know, and the list of criminals is long. It's Good Morning America. It's the three networks. It's CNN. I mean, it is just unbelievable. And, you know, it comes down to, the funny part is they're so unhinged that they will be the victims of any red flag laws that go into effect. You know, they're the ones that are exhibiting emotional instability. They're the ones with anger problems. They're the ones threatening people. It's them. It's the Democrats that are doing everything that they kind of say. These red flag laws are supposed to target some of the outrageous social media posts and all that. Democrats are doing a lot of it. I would say that if you had that UN speech, if that girl had been a U.S. citizen and over 20 and or over 18 and living in a state that had red flag laws, she could have been red flag lawed when you saw how angry and unhinged she was in that speech. So, you know, that's where those things lead, and that's why they've really lost the momentum. I mean, you don't hear anybody even talking about it anymore. It's unbelievable that our political discourse has just gotten so low. And, you know, we talk about impeachment a little bit, and you talk about that. The Democrats have now, as of 2 days ago, have blown any chance they had to try to get some bipartisan consensus on gun regulation. They've blown it because now everybody's retreated to their trenches. And frankly, I celebrate that because I think everything they were considering is BS and garbage anyway that won't do any good, won't address actual problems of safety and security. So, you know, the stuff that they were considering, the stuff they talk about, oh, we need another assault weapon ban, and they have no idea what an assault weapon is. They have no idea. The fake news, you know, they can't even get it right. Of the difference between a semi-automatic rifle and a fully automatic rifle. I think a lot of the non-gun public, or it's portrayed to them that, you know, an AR-15 is an M16 with the fully automatic capability and everything else. That's simply not true. And that's where they're going when they talk about military-grade weapons, is that there's this secret capability that makes the military grade that really we don't need, you know, that people really don't need. So if you don't need it, why? What's the problem with legislating against it? And of course, I won an argument at work on this. It's like, well, then we shouldn't have a car that goes over 60 miles an hour. We should have a national speed limit of 55 miles an hour, and every car should be governed to 60 miles an hour. Now, of course, that would completely ruin car sales. There's not going to be too many people buying Corvettes that are governed to not go past 60 miles an hour. We live in a country where if you want an SUV and you have the money, you can go buy one. If you want to drive an electric car or a hybrid, you can go purchase that. If you want to drive a sports car, you can go purchase that. That is freedom. And it extends into firearms. Having other people define what you can and can't have is just the opposite of freedom. It's absolutely juxtaposed to freedom because you're dictating your will onto somebody else who's not harming you. So consequently, that's what it is. I mean, if I wanted to take things away from people who could potentially harm themselves or be harmed with it. We wouldn't be able to play baseball because we wouldn't have bats. Nobody could ride a motorcycle. People couldn't do all kinds. There would be no rodeos in the country. There would be none of this, none of that. People wouldn't be able to go out and see the dolphins because it would scare the dolphins and they could be harming the dolphins. You know, you can't just shut everybody down, and it's wrong to shut down one segment. Well, you can shoot, but, you know, you can have a hunting rifle, but you really can't have a rifle that's good to shoot at a range or in competition, like an AR, or a rifle to defend yourself. Because as they said, and I forget which one of the morons it was, but, you know, they hold up an AK going, "You don't need this to hunt a duck." Well, you don't. And nobody would hunt a duck with that. That was designed for another purpose. It's used in competition, and it's used for self-defense. So, consequently, when you say you don't need to have this because all you're going to do is hunt a duck, you're telling somebody that you're going to infringe upon their freedom, and it's completely unacceptable. And our fake news supports that. But people are catching on now because the fake news has spread to everything else. That, you know, people are saying, well, this doesn't really matter with guns either. Used to be guns were the only victims of fake news. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, guns were the only victim of fake news. Now everything is a victim of fake news. And, you know, you see it all the time. You get this, well, you know, there was a study done which proved that clipping your fingernails leads to cancer. You know, that's an absurd overstatement, but it's all this kind of stuff. You know, eating Cheerios in the morning could lead to cancer, and there's a link between that. You know, there was one of my favorite fake news stories, which was absolutely the funniest thing I'd ever heard. Was I was after a professional football game. It was like a Monday or Tuesday. Well, there could be increase in beer prices at the stadium because global warming could negatively affect the hops crop, and therefore, you know, beer prices would skyrocket. And I was almost like, yo hippie dippy, have you not been to a professional sporting event like in the last 40 years? Because guess what? Beer prices are already sky high. You know, the people at professional football and baseball stadiums are paying, believe me, a premium for the beer they're drinking there, which is why they're not allowed to carry any beer in. You know, you have to go in without beer, and if you want to drink beer, the beer is very expensive. But the most laughable part of this is that if the climate did change to such a point that we couldn't grow hops, the last problem on the list, the very bottom, would be the fact that, well, we're having a hard time brewing beer and the prices at professional sporting stadiums are going to go, you know, through the roof if they have a roof there. You know, and I'm just sitting there going, this is the most ludicrous way to try to get people's attention and draw all this false concern and outrage and misplaced concern and outrage towards a completely political agenda by saying, you know, the sports morons are so stupid that when they hear this, they'll be concerned because they don't want their beer prices to go out of sight. So they'll do something about global warming. They'll join the chorus. So fake news is out there. Guns are not the only victim. And fortunately, now we can actually fight back against it. It's absolutely outrageous what they try to pull. Okay, in the gun culture, one of the funniest things I've seen probably in the last several weeks is, and it keeps popping up on my YouTube thing. I really don't subscribe to it, but there's a prepper guru, and I actually knew this guy. He's retired military, and I've spoken about him in previous podcasts. He's a guy who he has a military retirement and, you know, TRICARE and all those good things that military retirements get you. And yet he's preaching to everybody, go back to nature, you know, go live in your commune and all this. When he has a pretty substantial safety net provided not only in a retirement check from the U.S. government, but also, you know, health care. So he and his wife never have to worry. you know, you preach that kind of stuff to somebody 20, 25 years old, they come out, they don't get a check from the military, and they don't get a check, they don't get health care. So, you know, they're kind of out there on their own. They get cancer, get seriously hurt, or something else, and it's a problem. They don't have that safety net. So the people who are living this self-reliant lifestyle, you find out that they're actually not as self-reliant as you think. That, you know, once you've got yourself financially set within the current architecture and construct of society, it's a whole lot easier to say you're self-reliant than to actually be self-reliant without those, without that safety net. But anyway, these things pop up. And one of them I had, it was called Iranian sleeper cells. And I go, oh no, don't tell me this guy's actually, you know, telling people that there's Iranian sleeper cells around the country that are going to activate and all this. And actually, I was pleasantly surprised and then disappointed. He actually said, no, the people talking about that are fear-mongerers and they're paranoid and all the rest of it. And, you know, there aren't any Iranian sleeper cells out there. You don't really have to worry about that, blah, blah, blah. So it came down to where he thought it was all fear-mongering. And it is fear-mongering. Iranian sleeper cells are fear-mongering. It just is. But, of course, here's a guy who's put out literally probably several hundred videos about his own fear-mongering, and he's been fear-mongering for years. You know, it's all coming down, and if you don't move out of the city, you're a fool, because they're going to become these, you know, and they describe scenes that are lifted from fiction, you know, everything from The Walking Dead to, you know, the I Am Legend and all these other types of dystopian movies, you know, that's their vision of what's going to happen. So his fear mongering is okay, but other fear mongering about Iranian sleeping cells is bad and foolish. And, you know, that kind of brought me around to what really makes preppers tick, and it's the construction of their own reality. This guy was also the one who was pushing that guerrilla gunfighter BS book, you know, which is, I did a whole podcast on it, and basically, I tore it apart, because it's garbage. I mean, it's complete nonsense. And for every little nugget of something that might be good, which really was common wisdom, not anything new or original in there, there was, you know, 10 pages of BS. Guerrilla Gunfighter is a great, great book, and I'm sure the first book is just the same. I think I'll pass on that. You know, if you like reading F-bombs, and this guy's actually put out a couple of videos. If you look at them, you know, they're pretty sketchy. There's some sketchy dudes who put out stuff, and some of them become nationally known trainers. I mean, there's a guy in, I can't remember if he's in Tennessee or Kentucky, but yeah, so there's some real out there guys, and you know, it's best to just kind of stay away from them. I'd avoid them like the plague, because it's pretty bad. But prepping, you know, prepping falls into that whole thing of everything's going to fall down, and it's going to be a whole different world. It reminds me of that. There was a Kevin Costner movie, The Postman, where, you know, it's the same kind of thing. He's traveling around with a mule and kind of gets captured by the, you know, warlord, and they eat his mule, and he's got this thing of letters, and that's kind of to prove that that there's some sort of government, there's some sort of architecture still left, even though there isn't. And the guy who's the head, the kind of the warlord that he comes up against, turns out that, in, you know, before all the events happened that turned, you know, the world into this dystopian future, that he was an air conditioning salesman. So there are a lot of guys out there, and you know, there's a lot of people out there who they have a very, you know, they have a regular job, and yet they see that, hey, if society kind of turns on its head, or things are all different, you know, I won't be just the average guy on the street. Somehow I'll be a warrior king, and you know, if I have enough toilet paper and enough CR21 batteries and enough goodies hanging on my AR, I'll be some super bad dude, and nobody will mess with me. And yeah, so prepping's kind of there. So Anyway, going to something that's eminently more satisfying and more enjoyable is the silent boycott of Walmart. You know, and I'm one of them. I don't go into Walmart and say, you know, because I like the people who work in Walmart. I mean, most of them have been very polite. Most of them, you know, if somebody's not well-trained, I don't blame them. I blame Walmart. Yeah, there's some unmotivated slugs in there, but most of them are very nice people. So I wouldn't go give them a ration about, you know, what company policy is. You know, they're earning a paycheck, trying to contribute to their household and do all that. And I respect that, and I'm for it. But I'm just not spending money in Walmart. I'm not going in there. I'm not making a big to-do. I'm not writing letters to Walmart. I'm not telling them what jerks they are. I think they bailed on unprofitable lines, what they thought were kind of high labor-intensive, unprofitable lines, you know. And so that's what they did. And I'm doing the same thing. I'm bailing on them. So they want to bail on their ammo sales and all that. I'm bailing on them, you know. And this goes back. We discussed this. You know, Walmart quit selling AR-type rifles back like 2014 or 2015, something like that. And, you know, we all know this. This is the deal that, you know, if you're in the market for an AR rifle, you know, I'm just guessing the last place you go is Walmart. You know, you really don't go there to get an AR-type rifle. You go to a place that's probably got a selection, or you see it online and have it shipped to your dealer. But you just don't go into Walmart saying, yeah, I'm looking for an AR, you know. Which ones do you have? And Walmart, you know, for grins, I would go look there. And you know, I never saw ARs in there that weren't the very low-end DPMS Oracle, you know, a bottom-end type of AR. No frills, like every other gun Walmart sold, you know. You know, manufacturers must have a big box store model or something, because I saw 1022s that had, like, you know, just terrible-looking stocks. You know, they just weren't nice at all. But I'd go to a gun shop, and I would see something considerably better. So there's got to be, if you know about this, if you worked in a gun shop, and you know about, you know, that there's some sort of secret code for the low-end guns or something. Let me know if that exists. You don't have to give up any trade secrets, but send me a comment or something and let me know if that exists, because I suspect very strongly that that's the case. Brings me to another, you know, it would be funny if it just wasn't so sad, but Bass Pro Shops buys out Cabela's. Okay, who cares? I'll be honest with you, I never liked Bass Pro Shops. The only time I've ever had kind of a, I won't say altercation, but kind of a argument or confrontation with employees, it's been twice in Bass Pro. And I really didn't like them. For a while, they were the only place that would sell black powder. They don't anymore. Surprise. But one time a guy lied to my face, told me he didn't have any. I went back a couple hours later and was able to buy it. It was, I'll tell you the story sometime, but it was a really bad deal. Just, you know, I didn't really appreciate that. Another time was over some clothes. So I've never really been a Bass Pro fan. They buy Cabela's. Okay, that's fair enough. Well, apparently the company policy now, you're going, this is a head scratcher. There's several things. Number one is years ago, and up until maybe, I don't know when they changed, but I think it's been within the last 10 years, the AJ Savage company, who make outstanding rifles, really outstanding rifles, used to be they made just really solid, good bolt actions, no frills bolt actions. Now they make some super good, I mean, I was out firing a Savage 22 yesterday. Man, that thing is so, it's, you know, heavy barrel and all that. And they're not that expensive. Savage Mark II, and, you know, it's like it's under $200, and it is deadly accurate. It is great. I also have a Savage, what's the number? Savage, you know, 12, F12 or FE12, whatever it is. 26-inch heavy barrel, 6.5 Creedmoor. Same deal. You know, I got rid of the junky Savage stock that came with it. Didn't have an AccuStock. Had the cheaper one. But the thing's got an Accu trigger and this great barrel. And you can actually take the barrel off that floating bolt head so that the head space is right. I mean, that thing is great. What a great rifle. Well, years ago, Savage had, when the old man, AJ Savage, started the company, he had, because his last name was Savage, he had an Indian head because Indians were commonly called savages. And it looks like the Indian on the Indian head penny, the old Indian head penny that went out, that was in the like 1890s, early 1900s. So he had this Indian chief with a war bonnet as the Savage logo. Allegedly, and no one can really prove or disprove this, but allegedly he went to a local Indian tribe. They blessed off on it saying, yeah, we're good to go. That's a nice picture. We like this. Because the word savage wasn't really an invective then. It called somebody a savage. That just meant, hey, you're not, you know, a westernized colonial person. And nowadays, we would see that as an invective and something not nice to call somebody. So guns that have the Savage Indian Head logo, and also some guns by other manufacturers, i.e. like Winchester commemoratives, cannot be sold in those stores. And if they have them on hand, they kind of put them in purgatory, which is what they call it, and they can't sell it. They can't move it. It just sort of stays in there. You know, now, some of them are the Indian heads, and they won't take these kind of guns in on trade. Anything with a Native American image on it, they won't take in. That includes, like, the Winchester Crazy Horse commemorative rifle, which is a tribute rifle to Chief Crazy Horse, which, you know, man, I'd love to have one of those. I mean, I think they're cool looking. You know, they have the tacks on them the way that Native Americans used to decorate their Winchesters. It's got nice engraving. It's got, you know, a picture of Chief Crazy Horse engraved on it. I mean, it's a beautiful rifle. It's like a lot of those Winchester commemorative or tribute rifles. You know, it's a nice rifle. It's not really something you're supposed to use every day. Although if I had one, I'd shoot it because I think Chief Crazy Horse looking down from the happy hunting ground would approve of that. But yeah, I would love to have a Chief Crazy Horse. But, oh, no, could be offensive. Well, if it's not offensive to me, why not sell it? Or if they decide that this is so offensive, donate it to, I think he was a Sioux Indian, donate it to the Sioux Indian tribe and let them raffle it or keep it or display it, whatever they want to do to it. Don't just leave it locked up in a safe where nobody can get at it for the sake of political correctness. And I am also willing to bet that when the Chief Crazy Horse commemorative rifle was made, whenever that was, I don't know, I bet they had the blessing of the Sioux Indians. I bet the Sioux Indian tribes said, yeah, we're okay with this. We like this. This is a good deal. I'm an alumni of Central Michigan University, and the team is called the Chippewas. Okay, well, the Chippewas were on the hate list of the NC2A of horrible names that you can't use and everything else. And then just like the Florida State Seminoles, they produced the documentation where they'd gone to the Chippewa Nation, got it blessed off. The Chippewas are happy. They love having a sports team named for them in tribute, and just like the Florida State Seminoles. So, you know, a lot of this political correctness stuff is going way too far, gone way, way, way too far. Hey, let's go to the best part of the show, which is questions and answers, always my favorite part. And the first one I got is, how do you connect with other gun people? And I have to say that I'm no expert when it comes to making friends and influencing people. I am not an expert, but I'll give this my best shot. You know, I connect with other gun people usually at gun-related places or events. A couple of cases in point, when I was stationed in Germany years ago, you could actually own and have privately owned weapons in Germany if you were an American serviceman. And I think the rules have all changed now. But we were at one of those kind of partnership deals where there were some German reservists there and all that. And they were running, you know, different shooting stations. Well, when I pulled out my pistol, They started saying, what are you doing? You have a German pistol. And I'd had one of the police trade-in P1 that I'd bought from the U.S. Rod and Gun Club that was on our Kasern, which is the German word for base, our little base there. And So it was a police surplus pistol, and I'd purchased it, and I was carrying it in a holster, and they were very surprised to see that. And naturally, it got a little bit of attention, and I started talking to some of the German reservists and found out that there was a group of gun guys there, and enjoyed talking to them very much and created some friendships with them. So for there and years afterwards, I had these friends who lived in this really very cool place in southern Germany. It's very interesting that part of the reason that pistol was available in the U.S. Rod and Gun Club was it was surplus there because German laws at the time, and I don't know about now since there's the EU and all these other things, but you could not accrue a large collection of firearms. So you could get a license, and I think at the time you could own 4 handguns. So you had to be pretty selective. You just didn't buy, unless you wanted it for some sort of sentimental or some other reason. A lot of these pistols went unwanted because, hey, if I can only have 4 pistols, they would buy high-end stuff, SIG, P210, 9mm pistols, Korth revolvers, and some of this really, really high-end stuff, or Lugers. The Germans did like Lugers, although they would always tell me the best Lugers are in the States, and that's maybe true. But anyway, they had a lot of the kind of higher-end stuff, and this at the time, a police trade-in Walther P1 was considered pretty low. So unlike us, we can kind of own as many as we want to own. They had some very, very strict limits on the number they could have. So that's one way, just being around, going to events where other gun people are going to be there, whether it's kind of military themed or shooting themed events and clubs. That's the other place. Here in the States, a lot of times I meet people through the clubs I join. I join a shooting club and a range or a club that has its own range. But just by being there, meeting and talking to people, you make some very, very good friends there, meet some very interesting guys. So that's a great way to do it. I work in a field that has a lot of interaction with the military, and most of us are former military. So, in that kind of environment, it's not really a taboo subject at work to say, yeah, I do target shooting, I'm into guns, and you'll find other people who have the same similar interest. So beyond that, I say I don't really have a lot of experience. I would be very wary in telling people over the internet or confiding to strangers that have a net presence or whatever that you've never really met face to face, anything about yourself, including your firearms and whether you have them, don't have them, like them or whatever else. So, you have to be very, very careful and very circumspect, but clubs are a great way. Anything where you're face to face talking to other shooters, you can make some friends and find people with mutual interests. So that's how I connect with gun people. Again, I am no expert on making and influencing, making a lot of friends and influencing people. I'm just not that guy, but that's what I do. So the next question is interesting because it's very subjective. And I think the guy who asked me this was looking for suggestions, but I went ahead and just made this, a list specific to me because everybody's list is going to be different. And it goes, what are the most fun rifles and pistols for just shooting? And I'm assuming that kind of means plinking, not really competition oriented or anything, but just going out like with friends and family and shooting. So I made a list, and your mileage may vary, and I've probably left things off, but I'll go most fun rifles, and these are in no particular order of precedence or anything. This isn't a top 10 list, or number 5 isn't better than number 6 or whatever it is. I do enjoy shooting the M1 rifle. I don't really know why, other than it's very reliable, very historical, and it's one of those guns that every once in a while they say that there are some firearms that are worth more than the sum of their parts. They're greater than the sum of their parts, and the M1 rifle is definitely that. I really enjoy shooting it. I really enjoy having one. They're just a joy, and very reliable, and just very cool. It's just a lot of fun, and it's a lot of fun to show people, hey, this is what we used in World War II, and it's a lot of fun. Another rifle I enjoy on the same vein is the SMLE. It doesn't really matter which model. I know there are 3 or 4 different models. Again, another great historical gun. you know, 303 British, the rimmed cartridge is in there. And it's actually a lot of fun to shoot and a lot of fun to show people. And, you know, for years and years, they were very moderately priced. Now they're kind of going up a little bit, but they're still pretty attainable. Probably half the cost of an M1. But yeah, that's a lot of fun. Ammo is a little bit more challenging to find, but PPU is good ammo, and it's out there, and it's not that expensive. So that's a great rifle, a lot of history, just a lot of fun, easy to operate, easy to load, you know, the same thing with the M1, you know, which if you know how to load and fire an M1, there's no real drama there. It's a lot of fun. The next one is unusual, but I do enjoy shooting it. And it's the ATI STG-44, the 22 caliber version of the dreaded German Sturmgewehr 44. The reason I like it is because I will never own a genuine Sturmgewehr. The original examples are very, very costly. And, you know, it's cheap. It has this great look to it, and you get the feel. Again, you get the feel of what the weapon was like. Now, it doesn't have the recoil or the muzzle blast, and obviously the controls are pretty much the same, but it's different internally. It's a lot of fun, and I really enjoy it. And kind of on the same vein, although it's a center fire, I enjoy the semi-automatic Thompsons. I think they're great. Everybody, even if they don't know very much about firearms, knows about the Tommy gun. So when they see it they immediately are very surprised and very excited that it's going to be out there. So the Thompson really fits right in with that. And again, it's, you know, you can shoot it, but you don't have the fully automatic capability. But most people are very, very happy with it the way it is. So, especially if they're SBR'd, you know, they look just like the real thing. And that's what people really enjoy about them. Next one are RPK and AKs. Just a lot of fun to shoot. The 7.62 versions have just enough recoil to make them kind of interesting, but anybody can handle it. The 5.45s are really smooth and easy to fire, so they're great. And it kind of helps introduce people to the Rock and Lock magazine, and it's very simple, very easy to get people to train them on, because it's a very simple gun. It's very reliable, and it's designed to be that way. So it's a good deal. Other guns I like, and this is kind of odd, but I like what we used to call varmint rifles. I don't really shoot them. I do have that 6.5 Creedmoor I was talking about earlier. That's kind of in this class, but I really like the rifles that they have a powerful scope. You can kind of set them up on a bench, and you can hit a small target. I don't hunt, and I don't bench rest and stuff like that. But every once in a while, it's fun to take out a rifle that's just designed, purpose-built for just hitting a small target. And that's, I kind of like that. I like that with 22s also. That's why I like 22 target rifles and 22 pistols occasionally. They're just purpose-built for one thing, to get the bullet hole as close to the X-ring or in the X-ring. And I really like that. That's a lot of fun. For plinking, I do enjoy the Mini 14, and I enjoy it actually more than the AR, as much as I like the AR. Although, I will have to say, the Brownells Retro AR is getting an honorable mention on this list. And it's right up there with the Mini 14. Mini 14 is just fun. I mean, it's a kind of a grand system. Takes a detachable magazine. It's a lot of fun. I mean, and especially when you got, you know, teenagers or younger people, they really enjoy shooting that, and it's a lot of fun. So it's light, it's easy to handle, low recoil, and so it's you know, a lot of people dog on the Mini 14, but it's actually really accurate, especially if you're not trying to extend it out past 100 yards. And I think I'll round off the rifle list by putting black powder cartridge rifles. And I didn't pick any particular one. I really like Trapdoor Springfields, have always been interesting, and the Falling Blocks. They're all very interesting. And even some of the early repeaters, like the Winchester 73s that, you know, were made in the black powder era and take black powder cartridges. Very, very interesting guns. They're a lot of fun to shoot. And black powder is really kind of getting back to the essence. A lot of people who've never experienced that, you know, the smell is fun for them, the smoke, kind of that popping sound as opposed to that, you know, high velocity crack that comes out. So a lot of people enjoy black powder cartridge. People have never been exposed to it because for years, it was a dying or dead art, you know. Nobody really did it. The numbers were really small, like the 50s, 60s, 70s. It wasn't until the 1980s it started making a real comeback with the black powder silhouette shooting and things like that. So, and the great reproductions that were on the market. But I like the original rifles, and I like the I like black powder. I like making my own black powder rounds. It's laborious, but it's somehow it's like getting back to the roots of something. It's a lot of fun. Okay, we'll now go to pistols and revolvers, and I have to say that again, this is in no particular order of fun or anything, so the bottom one is just the same as the top, but I like cap and ball pistols. I like the history. I like the somehow that mid-1800s technology. It's just fascinating. It's fascinating to see how they went from the single-shot flintlock to the single-shot percussion, then to the percussion cap and ball revolver. And they're just fun to shoot. Again, they have the pop and the smoke and the smell that's just, you know, it takes you back to another time and place. And they're a lot of fun. And it's a lot of fun to show people how they're loaded. And so because a lot of people only know about guns of that era from what they've seen in the movies, which can be horribly inaccurate. You know, you have 1873 Colts in the 1840s, and it goes on and on and on. You can list all the movie mistakes that they made, especially in the 50s, 60s, 70s. And so getting back to reality is pretty a lot of fun. A revolver I really enjoy shooting is the Smith & Wesson Model 1917. And that kind of extends a bit to the other end frames. But the 1917 is a beautiful revolver. It's not too heavy. It's powerful enough. It's really a nice revolver. And, you know, they've brought it back a couple times. One of them was, they had the horrible case-hardened frame, you know. It was putrid looking. I mean, it was really putrid looking. But the old Smith & Wesson 1917 is just a great old revolver. And the only reason it didn't become a lot more popular was, I think, policemen carrying it day in and day out. It was just a little too heavy, and a 38 K-frame was a much, much more compact and lighter gun to tote around. But I really enjoy the 1917. I think it's really a great revolver design. And really, they shoot very, very well today. If you can get your hands on one, they're really nice. Of course, no list would be complete without 1911 and 1911 A1s. And I don't really have to cover over those. They're just fun. They're the pistol equivalent of the Garand. In my experience, there's no drama with them. You load them, you fire them, they work. Everything seems to be okay. There isn't any secret sauce that has to go on it. There's no drama. There's none of this, none of that. It just, you load it, you fire it, and it's good. And it is what it is. So they're a lot of fun. I really enjoy shooting them. The only thing I don't like about them is picking up the brass off the ground. That's the only thing I don't like. And then I kind of put a broad category here, the 38 Special revolvers. There's Colts, there's Smith & Wesson, all that kind of K-frame style revolvers. They even go up to N-frame, but those are fun guns to shoot. And they're good guns if you have family or friends out who don't do shooting or don't do a lot of shooting. A very easy, safe gun to use, and you kind of keep an eye on it. See, kind of know exactly what condition it's in and everything. Really like those. Mild recoil. Just, you know, not too heavy. Just nice guns. They're just a lot of fun if you have an afternoon and you're just, you know, shooting at tin cans or melons or something else. Or out on a range where you're just shooting at paper targets. They do equally as well. A lot of fun. A couple of choices that are more specific. Everybody enjoys a Walther PPK. Everybody enjoys it. It's James Bond's gun. I don't care what he's carrying in the later movies. Sean Connery and the PPK are it. And everybody who sees it likes it. It's a beautiful gun. It's streamlined. I like them in 32 better than 380. They're even more pleasant to shoot. So the PPK is definitely a gun that people really enjoy shooting. And the last is a very unusual choice, but it's the Desert Eagle. Everybody who sees them, when you actually see them in person, you're very impressed by them. They're large. They're very, very industrial looking. They're powerful. But you know, the 44 is really not that bad a kicker. So, you know, people who've done some shooting can transition into that very easily. The 50 is a little more of a challenge, but the 44 is really nice, and it is powerful. People enjoy that. Now, it gets expensive when everybody wants to shoot it, because they are not cheap to feed, because you don't shoot lead bullets in them. Everything has to be a jacketed bullet, and so it's the stuff you buy in the store. So it's a very, very good very good gun, a lot of fun, and they're really quality made. I mean, there's nothing cheap on a Desert Eagle, and even in today's prices, they still represent a pretty strong value for your dollar. You'll pay for it, but they're a pretty strong value for the dollar. Okay, let's wind this up with the last question, which is the obverse of the question we just had. What guns are least fun? And this is actually a little more important, because sometimes people will buy a firearm and then they're disappointed with it, and they may not be very advanced shooters. Maybe it's a first or second firearm they buy, but they kind of read about it on the internet and they want it, they buy it, and then they're disappointed because it's not that much fun to shoot. And so I will go ahead and in fact, I'll explain a little bit of this later, but the rifles that I find least fun to shoot has to be 8mm Mauser military bolt action rifles. And there's a variety of reasons for that. Number one is you have to find them in good shape, which is pretty reasonable. You can usually find them in good shape, especially like the Yugoslavian ones, or some of the ones that didn't get any heavy use or were actually made after World War II. I don't care for the sights on them. They usually have pretty good triggers, but I don't care for the sights. The recoil I just find uncomfortable. I don't know why, I just do. It's a stout recoiling cartridge, and the funny part about that is, when you look at European soldiers from 100 years ago, or soldiers from 100 years ago from anywhere, they were a lot smaller than they are today. So the 8mm Mauser always seemed to be a curious choice to me, because there were lower recoil alternatives available, and you could actually put them in slightly lighter rifles. I think one of the great military cartridges, and our friend of the podcast, he's kind of invigorated me on these, is 7.65 Argentine is awesome. That is an awesome military cartridge. 7mm Mauser is an awesome military cartridge. Why Germany and European armies did not go with those is just very odd to me. It's just very odd, especially with the Swedes going to 6.5. I just find it odd. I will say, though, that I do respect the 8mm Mauser. Our friend of the podcast, who I've mentioned many times, he has, of all things, a Gewehr 88 that was in Turkish service. So you would automatically think this gun's going to be a doorstop. You know, the assumption that most people would make is this gun is going to be used so hard that it's gone and everything else. However, that gun has performed exceptionally well in our military rifle matches, and it shoots an excellent score. So, you know, the quality of manufacture is definitely there, and the quality with quality ammunition, it does perform, but it's just not one of my favorites. So I really don't shoot it that much. I really prefer the Argentine or the 7mm Mauser much more. Okay, some guns that I don't find very much fun is the Egyptian Hakim and the Swedish AG-42B, which are essentially the same gun. One's an 8mm Mauser, the Egyptian Hakim, and the AG-42B is in 6.5 Swede. They're long guns. It's like shooting a very long rifle. I don't know that they have 30-inch barrels. I think they're somewhat less than that. But because of the way the action's designed, it's a long action gun, and it's pretty ponderous. The Egyptian Hakim is, and the recoil is kind of manageable, but you have to be careful with the Hakim that you don't put any, you got to be careful with the surplus ammo you run in it because the Turkish stuff will blow it apart. So, and any of the high stuff, and who knows anymore? Who knows? So you're safer and better off putting just PPU, current manufacturer ammo, through it. And it's probably fine. It does have a big muzzle brake on it that the people shooting to the left and right of you will hate you, but it does have that on there. And that increases the blast quite a bit. A fun gun to shoot, but boy, let me tell you something. When you watch that bolt go forward, you do not want your digits anywhere near that. And it is not a gun that you want novice shooters touching because, you don't want to see somebody get their hand or fingers mashed in that thing. It is, people talk about Grand Thumb. Well, Grand Thumb is nothing compared to what one of these things would do to your, they'll mangle you pretty hard. So, yeah, I mean, that's a little hyperbole, but you definitely don't want to get your fingers caught in that. And same thing with the AG-42B. It's long, it's ponderous. It's very enjoyable to shoot in 6.5 and very accurate, but holy cow, it's one of those things where it's and they did not have, they have detachable magazines, but it was not designed as a detachable magazine rifle the way, say, the M14 or G3 is. It was more like the SVT where you keep the, or the SMLE where you keep the magazine in the rifle and you feed it through chargers, what we call stripper clips. Or like the rifle on the next list, the SKS. But yeah, the Hakim and the AG-42B, forget it. SKS comes up and it's the same thing. Although I like intermediate cartridge rifles, especially for newer or less experienced shooters, SKS is kind of a pain. It's just hard to load. And what I mean by hard to load, it's not difficult. It's just a little more time consuming than I'd like. I'd rather go with a Mini 14 or something else that you just click a magazine into rather than worry about putting the top cartridges in and then the bolt and all that. It's just a little too much, just a little too much hassle. Don't really care for the looks of the SKS. I don't know why, but it always looks a little ugly to me. I actually like the Rashid, which is the AG-42B, except it's in 7.62 by 39, and it's kind of a rare gun, but it's very cool. It is very cool. It looks cool. It loads the same way. It's got the same weaknesses, but it's very cool. And they scale down the action, which is nice, so that it's a lot more compact rifle. But the SKS, yeah, that can sit on the shelf. The other things that I consider least fun are hunting rifles, and those are rifles designed to be carried, bring down big game. A lot of big recoil. They're just not that much fun. They're purpose built for, and what they're purpose built for, they will do very, very well at, but not fun to shoot. They're meant for carrying and shooting a cold bore shot at a trophy elk or a trophy bear or something. Not a lot of fun on a range. You usually wind up not using those very much. Okay, and that brings us to pistols that are least fun. I have to say the Tokarevs, I've never found them that much fun. The recoil's a little snappy. They're good guns. Make no mistake, these are excellent firearms and very well made. I mean, I've never seen a poorly made Tokarev. Even the Chinese ones are even Chinese. And when I say Chinese ones, I don't mean Chinese level of manufacture. They're usually pretty very, very good. I'm talking about like Vietnam bringbacks that saw some hard service in the jungle, and they were still very, very serviceable and very, very functional. I don't really care for the I don't care for the recoil. The grip kind of comes down. The grip angle is not something we're used to. It's more of a 90-degree grip angle. They're fun collectibles. They're great guns. Is it something that I would give to a new or kind of a novice shooter now? It's something that you kind of have to be a collector and kind of have to be used to shooting guns. You pick up a Tokarev, pick up a 1911, and you'll see the difference. And I put the CZ-52, the Czech CZ-52 pistol. I put that in the same category. It's clunky. It's there, and it shoots a Tokarev round. It's just not a gun that I consider a lot of fun. It's an interesting gun, and when you're in the mood, it's great. But for an afternoon, I would leave it behind. Another one. This is going to surprise a lot of people, but Colt Single Action Armies. Really don't enjoy shooting them that much. The funny part is I enjoy Ruger Blackhawks. They've got better sights. They've got very good triggers, and they're nice guns. I enjoy shooting those. The Colts, not so much. I find the sights are rudimentary. The triggers are fine, but the hammer fall is really... I don't enjoy the hammer fall on that. I always kind of think that maybe it throws me off a little bit. They're slow loading, like all single actions are, even, you know, the Rugers and the other things I mentioned. I just have never really thought that they were that good. They just don't have to me, I value good sights, and they just don't have good sights. Then they came out with the Bisley model, which had a funky grip, and it had the same sights, and it's supposed to be the Target model. And I'm like, whoa. You basically took one of the better parts of the gun, made it worse, and then didn't improve the worst part of the gun. So, I don't – the Bisleys and the single-action armies, just don't care for them. Really wouldn't take one out. They're fun barbecue guns, and they're nice pieces of history and Americana to own. But when it comes down to just – shooting, just putting bullets on target, having a good time. Now, I don't care for them much at all. The Nagant revolver, I think I tore that up pretty hard on the military handguns, you know, top five handguns or bottom five handguns. I tore it up. I mean, it's a great handgun because it proves how irrelevant military handguns are. But yeah, it's quirky. The ammo's, you know, I find the ammo hard to get. I'm sure there's PPU and stuff out there, but the people who have them, and I have one that I bought for some ridiculously low price 25 years ago or whatever it was, we have them because they're neat pieces of history, and they're fun, they're neat to look at, and everything else. But, unless you're wanting to give somebody the experience of shooting a Degant revolver, it stays on the shelf. It doesn't go anywhere. The only time I can't think of when I've actually seen them in the movies other than Enemy at the Gates, where, you know, a couple of the guys who are on the boat to Stalingrad decide that, you know, they're going to go the other way. They jump off the boat and they're going to swim away, and the commissars are there shooting at them, you know, and shooting their own men because they're of cowardice or whatever it is. I guess they were jumping off the boats when the Stukas were attacking. Maybe that was it, which doesn't seem like cowardice to me. Seems smart. But they weren't liking that, and they were shooting those guys in the deal. I remember seeing it there. I don't really know. I haven't watched, you know, Dr. Zhivago or Battleship Potemkin or anything. I haven't watched any of those in a long time, so I don't really know what the deal is on those. So, they may be in the movies, they may not. So, but I don't really care for them. They're kind of odd pistols, and they're really not all that much fun to shoot. Interesting, but actually putting lead on target, not so much. Well, that's it for another episode. This is episode number 38 of Old School Guns, and it's hard to think that we got 38. We've done 38 episodes, and we don't have a single sponsor. So, hey, that should tell you something right there, that they all hate us. So, anyway. Go ahead and please tell your friends, please hit the like button, please subscribe, whatever it is that you need to do, and you'll get a notification when the next episode is posted. Until then, this is Old School Guns, out.